Anyway, I'm Gail Brewer, city council member and chair of the Committee on Technology and Government. And we're here today to talk about Intro 533A, which talks about webcasting, something that I think is part of what government is aiming for. So webcasting is the distribution of video and audio via the Internet to any personal computer or video-capable device connected to the Internet. Most webcasts make use of streaming media technology to deliver video and audio to the user with as little delay as possible. Webcasts can be either live or archived online, and it makes a great deal of sense to archive material so you can find it later. And they are made available on demand and may even be saved locally by personal computers for playback at a later time without the need for a connection. The reason that we're talking about this, one reason is that there are so many states and cities and governments doing it, but also because I teach at Hunter College, and the students decided one day that instead of going to meetings, they would just look online, and they would cover their paper. And I said, well, how in the world can you do that? That's not possible. They said, oh, yes, it is. So executive order number 3, January 1st, 2007, former Governor Spitzer promulgated executive order number 3 in our state, which requires all meetings of state agencies and public authorities subject to the open meetings law to be broadcast on the net through the use of webcasting. And that happened by July 1st, 2007. Included in the definition of a state agency is department, office, board, commission, and any other instrumentality of the state. One example that I found particularly interesting was the Hudson River Park Trust. So I was able to see discussions about my neighborhood online in the parks. On June 18th, 2008, Governor Patterson signed executive order number 9, which ordered the continuation of the above-mentioned order. Advantages of webcasting. Webcasting increases public access to government by permitting people who cannot attend a meeting to stay informed about the actions of their local government. Archival video on demand allows people to have complete access to full government meetings according to their own schedules and at no cost, which may result in increased transparency and community involvement. Webcasting also enhances a city's image as open, accountable, and technologically forward. Currently, there are over 400 cities in the United States and several cities around the world, including London, Paris, and Rotterdam, that offer webcasting of meetings. The intro that we're talking about today, 533A, Section 1 of this intro amends another section of the city charter by adding a new subdivision that requires all city agencies, committees, commission, task forces, and the city council to record their open meetings in digital video format and webcast the meetings live where practicable. Recording shall be made available to the public on the city's website not more than 72 hours after the adjournment of that meeting. And another section provides that this law shall take effect 90 days after enactment. We're very excited about this discussion today. I think what's also interesting is that different states and legislatures are doing the webcasting, sometimes in-house, sometimes working with for-profit companies. And I think New York, as usual, try to do it in the best fashion possible. So without further ado, I'd like to thank certainly Jeff Baker, who is counsel to the committee, and welcome a council member, Oliver Coppell from the Bronx. And we look forward to your testimony, Commissioner. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Chair Brewer, Councilmember Coppell, and other members of the City Council Committee on Technology and Government who, by the way, will be able to watch this on video streaming that we'll do after the meeting, since we have our cameras here today. My name is Paul Cosgrave.
My name is Paul Cosgrave, as you know. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications, do it as we're referred, and I also serve as the CIO here for the City of New York. With me today is Christopher Long. As you know, he's the Director of Web Strategy and Operations for our organization, and he's New York City's webmaster. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today regarding the proposed City Council introduction 533, which would require the recording, archiving, and where practical, live webcasting on NYC.gov of all city hearings and meetings. In keeping with Mayor Bloomberg's mandate to use technology to make New York City government more accessible, transparent, and accountable, the administration agrees with the goal of enhancing current capabilities on NYC.gov to webcast public hearings and meetings. However, significant consideration must be given to the cost associated with this endeavor, as well as the size, scope, and timeline for implementation. And while there are relatively moderately priced technical solutions available today to achieve the goal, there are both logistical and fiscal challenges inherent in developing a citywide solution. Though not at all insurmountable, we believe these issues should be fully considered before deciding upon a viable solution, legislative or otherwise, and timeline, and we're willing to keep the Council appraised of our progress in these areas as we explore options for moving forward. Through NYC TV, which is here today, Dewitt covers more than 530 New York City Council events each year, and has done so back to 2005. This year already, we've covered more than 450 such meetings. Channel 74 on local television is dedicated to government coverage, including 61 programming hours per week of council programming. So on average, council hearings usually air 7 to 10 days after they occur through high-profile hearings, although the high-profile hearings are scheduled, in many cases, the very next open-air date. Channel 74 is streamed live today on NYC.gov, though the program itself airs on tape delay and is not archived online. Efforts to webcast these hearings live are now underway by the City Council and may involve a capital investment in the infrastructure of the Council chambers. Archiving these hearings for on-demand access on NYC.gov would entail digitizing each event for storage on a server and assign staff to manage the portfolio of hearings, which are additional costs that would be need to consider. There's also logistical costs, and if you will, for example, take this room. While we're able to have a camera person here today to conduct the camera and move it, essentially, we don't cover all the meetings in this room, as you know. So logistically, there is a cost if we had to do that, because just having a single mounted camera, let's say, would not in any way be adequate for this room, because you've got three very different angles that you'd have to cover. So those are issues that logistically we have to work out. So we appreciate the work your staff has done in compiling the list of examples of other municipalities that have mandated webcasting. However, most of the municipalities listed, even the larger ones such as Chicago, which estimate the cost based only on webcasting at city council hearings, cannot compare with what is being proposed in this bill. So this is illustrated by another municipality your staff's researched, Vancouver, British Columbia. So like New York City, Vancouver uses a combination of cable broadcasting and webcasting. And similar to today's proposed bill, Vancouver requires access to be made to an unlimited live audience and archiving for 3 months. Total estimated cost for their meetings is $495 per meeting. Now, in New York City, a conservative estimate finds that in any given month, there may be more than 80 public hearings and meetings conducted by the city's mayoral agencies, the city council, and there I'm counting only the stated meetings, and borough president offices. So this does not include another approximate 40 city council committee meetings, such as this one, an average of 3 meetings per month by each of the city's 59 community boards, which includes both committee meetings and the subcommittees, or special events such as bill signings or citywide addresses. So all told, we have an estimate, which we believe is conservative, that there would be more than 3,000 events per year to be webcast, live recorded, captured, and documented and archived in NYC.gov for future access by the public. So if we just use Vancouver's model as a rough baseline, which frankly may or may not prove to be replicable one for New York City, and not counting the initial equipment costs, this would mean nearly $1.6 million in annual recurring costs in this proposed bill. So comparing this with the cost New York State incurred when mandating webcasting for all its agencies via executive order in 2007, the state committed nearly $2 million to implement its directive for 65 agencies in the initial 4 months of the program, and that does not include staff expenses. The $2 million figure consists of a one-time outlay of approximately $1.1 million for equipment and $800,000 in recurring costs for captioning and other services. One estimate simply for captioning services for deaf and hard-hearing individuals is $315 per hour. So that's another feature that needs to be considered in looking at the full costs. So while not explicitly required as per Introduction 533, consistent with the accessibility of services, of city services, captioning is an added consideration that should be assessed before proceeding with a comprehensive webcasting effort. So it's clear today that the efforts of the state have required significant funding. One primary contract for webcasting services that state agencies can leverage includes a cost of $1,500 per meeting, which does not, in fact, include the captioning services described above. So for a typical meeting where there is captioning at the state level, we're talking more around $2,000. And that's for a one-hour meeting. As you may know, some of our meetings here in the city, such as Landmarks Commission, go on all day. So this is for a one-hour meeting. So you can start to get some large costs here. So what should be noted is that to a large extent, state webcasts consist of one mounted stationary camera streaming live via connection to a broadband-enabled PC. And so accordingly, there's little to no production value, if you will. No multiple camera angles, no lower third graphics associated with the speaker, their titles, the topic, the date of the event, any of that. None of that is included in some of the state broadcasts. So the meetings appear as they would to, if you will, silent observer, so think of a fly on the wall. Any additional production elements required during the live webcast or for the archived events, such as zooming in on speakers, captioning, titling, all those things, would require significant increases in staffing levels across the city, as they would need to either attend every hearing or conduct considerable post-production work. As such, we would propose that the number of required webcast events be limited, at least in the initial phases of deployment. A totally different challenge presented by the bill as it's currently written is the 90-day time frame provided for implementation. Returning to the New York State example, consistent with the executive order issued in January 2000, agencies were required to present their plans for webcasting public events within 90 days, and they were given an additional 3 months thereafter to implement their plans for a total of 180 days. This compares to the 90 days total that's in the proposed legislation. So we believe a similar time frame would be more appropriate at the municipal level as well, taking into account both the size of the city of New York and the sheer volume of public hearings and meetings its agencies, committees, commissions, and task forces would conduct regularly. As part of the statewide implementation, which proceeded in an essentially federated manner by each agency, the state offices for technology and general services offered policy guidance and roundtable discussions. They set minimum requirements for open meeting webcast, improved their procurement options, and provided technical assistance in equipping meeting facilities. In developing a plan for phased implementation here at the city as well, DeWitt would explore similar measures. A final consideration is retention standards across the agencies, since not all events will require similar archiving. A community board meeting will likely appeal to a much more limited audience than, let's say, City Council Speaker Quinn's State of the City address, though each might require the same bandwidth for storage if they are of a similar duration. The longer the retention schedule for such meetings, the more storage is required, which in turn results in a significant increase in cost. Therefore, the city or individual agencies should webcasting proceed in a decentralized way as it has at the state level. We'll also need to invest in additional technical support staff, which will also increase commensurate with the number of public meetings and hearings included. That same community board might decide that on a limited budget, 3 months is adequate for archive meetings. It may not wish be tied to the council standard, which potentially could be twice that length, for example. So therefore, while the administration certainly agrees with the spirit of the proposed legislation and the added dimension of accessibility it would bring to the city's numerous public proceedings, it's clear that more consideration must be given to the timeline for deployment, the scope and phasing of the program, and any proposed retention schedules. While we do not support the Intro 533 in its current draft, the administration is open to exploring the use of cost-effective measures to facilitate webcasting and archiving on a pilot basis for agencies conducting public hearings and other events on a regular basis, and we recommend that these be scheduled in modern broadband-equipped meeting rooms, such as those that are across the street at City Hall. We imagine these efforts would begin by asking those agencies to submit plans describing how each would implement its own webcasting capability over the subsequent months, developing from there a strategy for wider implementation. And as part of this initial phase, we would hope to include the city council hearings, which are now included as part of NYC TV's Channel 74 programming. As always, we're pleased to keep the council informed of our efforts, building on the strides already made with streamlining the city council hearings through NYC.gov. Thank you. I'm glad to take any questions.
Thank you very much. I know you have a meeting at 11, so we will make sure that you meet that time commitment.
Thank you.
I want to also thank Councilmember Tish James for joining us here today. One of the questions I had is, when you talk to the state of New York, and I thank you for doing that research, the state, is my understanding, would have a similar number of meetings, and they would be statewide. So, for instance, when I was looking online at the Hudson River Park Trust, I have no idea where they're meeting, to be honest with you, but I don't know if it's a modern room. And it's also my understanding that the state is using an outside contractor and the state legislature is doing an in-house video. So I'm just wondering, when you talk to the state, was that a statewide executive order? Are the meetings covered statewide because they obviously have statewide meetings?
Yeah, the executive order that the governor issued was to all the gubernatorial agencies. So it does not apply, actually, to the Assembly or to the Senate.
Right, no, it's just for the agencies.
Right.
There are two different contracts, two different means.
So we talked to the folks in the governor's office and about the programs they have envisioned. One issue that came up, I didn't mention in the testimony, but it's something to be considered here, is that it's actually had an impact in where they can hold the meetings. So, for example, if they want to go out to the community and hold the meeting in the community, it actually makes it more difficult in some ways because that meeting room then has to be equipped. So they've actually had to hold some meetings away from where they actually wanted to hold the meetings because of this requirement. So that does play a factor in the physical location of the meetings.
Okay. I mean, I think it plays both ways because more people can see the meetings that aren't webcast, and then those that aren't, I suppose, as time goes on, would become more tech savvy. I mean, that's something that we're all. When you say infrastructure, I know you talked a little bit about you need a couple of cameras, but when we do the great work of NYC TV, two things. One, because of the lack of technology now, there's only one camera. And it, to the credit of the camera people and to NYC TV, it looks good when you see it on Channel 74. We don't have captions, to the best of my knowledge, and we never know who's speaking. But it's still something. So I guess what I'm saying is maybe certainly we have to be, I assume, ADA compatible. That's always something to think about. But when we say we can't do it because of X, Y, and Z, I mean, NYCT is doing the meetings without some of the bells and whistles that you're describing.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think I would like to see something moving, even though it's not perfect, is what
sure.
I'm saying.
Sure. So there's a couple different points there that are worth commenting on. Let me just take the accessibility, ADA compliant type rules.
Very important.
It's not mentioned in the bill, so the bill is silent on that.
Right.
The governor's executive order did require captioning. Right. So that's an important issue. Because it does involve a fair amount of production costs in addition to just having the camera in the room. So I just thought that
that's
out
a good point.
As an issue to be considered. No position one way or the other, just wanted to make it clear. The other point in terms of infrastructure, and some of this gets rather, you know, it's not visible as it might be with the multiple cameras or whatever, but there's cabling costs in some cases. So one of the restrictions we've had just in being able to handle meetings at City Hall is the landmark status of the building and the lack of cabling infrastructure in that building. So those are the types of things that have to be considered wherever we set these up.
My understanding from meeting with some of the companies is that regarding the captions, it is really expensive and almost impossible to do real time as one sees on NBC and ABC with, you know, grammatical spelling mistakes. But if one does it not in real time and looks at the transcript and goes back over it, it's not as expensive. So I'm just saying there are some cost-saving measures that are possible, is my understanding from talking to the companies. But it's obviously something that can be discussed.
Yeah, we totally agree. The only point we wanted to make in terms of the comparisons we were given to what other cities were doing and what it was costing them is the the labor aspect of these things were really not included in most of the estimates. So they just need to be considered.
Okay. Archiving is an issue. What is the, I should know this, what's the law on, there's obviously paper archiving done by Commissioner Anderson, and then I don't know if there's video archiving in terms of NYC TV. What's the archiving policy for the city?
I'm going to let Chris handle that. You know that better than I do.
Introduce yourself, sir. Yeah. We love you, but introduce yourself.
Chris Long with the Department of Information Technology.
Push the button. It's Loc Tech.
Loc Tech.
Right now, we have media servers at MetroTech where we archive our files. There's not an official policy, but we haven't had to delete any files as of yet, but we're getting to the point where we might start rolling off some really dated materials. But I don't know that there is a specific law in terms of retention with regard to the video files that we have.
Okay. All right. So, and then, again, as more and more becomes online, and I guess that's something down the line to talk about.
Yeah, it's an issue that's much broader than just video. I mean,
yes.
We're currently discussing it with the law department on all sorts of records and things that's
absolutely
becoming a very cost prohibitive issue.
Absolutely.
And one other thing is the vast majority of our video files now are relatively small in duration, so they're not going on for hours and hours.
Okay. Can webcasts, if done, be offered at different bit rates to accommodate users who may be using dial-up? That's something that, obviously, when you're talking about government, we want to be as accessible as possible. Obviously, is that something that has come up at all? Or,
you know, generally speaking, video over, let's say, a 9600 board modem, which would be dial-up, has not been very effective. There's ways of doing it, be very granular. It would not be very clear, probably not recommended, frankly. But generally speaking, you're talking about someone with accessibility by broadband technology.
Okay. I know you talked about, and I appreciate that there are ways of looking at this, and we could talk about scaling down, changing, et cetera. One of the issues is how would we think about, for instance, I don't know that every single committee of every single community board would be of interest to anybody. So there are certainly lots of ways that one could look at this. Do you know if, and maybe we should have researched this more, if other cities or states or even the state of New York have some cutoffs? In other words, does it have to be every single? What would be some ideas about how it could be scaled down from your perspective? Because I agree with you. Every single public meeting is not of interest to the public.
Yeah. So, first of all, we'd recommend not referencing the open meetings law because
that's everything.
That's everything. So we would need to do this in a more segmented way in terms of how we address it. I think our recommendation, frankly, is that, as they did in the state, permit a period of planning up front, let's say 90 days, as they did in the state, and then we could come up with a timeline of how we would do this and exactly what meetings it would make sense to do this with.
Now, what kind of the state of New York was a $2 million startup cost, which seems today actually quite low, which is but what kind of infrastructure would be necessary in order to do webcasting? Would we have to change 22 Reed Street? Would we have to change other meeting rooms that are used frequently by city agencies? Again, there are so many of them.
So if you're satisfied with the way it was done at the state, I mean, you referenced the Hudson Parks reservation, other examples that we've looked at.
That's not in a fancy meeting room. That's what I was referencing.
Other examples we've referenced here and used is the Public Service Commission, et cetera. So if you're satisfied with the way those meetings work, then I think the New York State estimate is probably a pretty good estimate, actually, for on a per unit basis. But the best way to do this would be to confine it to some set number of rooms and not make it all open-ended. And it's the community boards, frankly, that concern us because the community boards, as you know, some of those meetings are sometimes conducted in people's homes and stuff. I mean, so, you know, you really want to be fairly constrained on the meeting rooms.
Okay. And do you think that the city already has, and this is what you would determine, I guess, from each agency, have a lot of this capability? You'd have to ask each agency to see what their mediums look like and what their capability is.
Exactly, and that's what they did at the state. During that 90-day period, each agency had to come up with a plan of how it was going to meet the governor's executive order. And during that 90-day initial period, they said how they would equip their rooms, what it would cost. And it also gave them time to put in the procurement vehicles.
With that kind of plan,
assuming again that we limit it to a reasonable number, not let's say excluding the community boards as an example, the state estimates a reasonable time frame.
Now, how would this coordinate with, I guess, NYCTV? Because right now, to the credit of NYCT, a lot of forums are covered, council meetings, mayoral, etc. And so would there be overlap? Would we have a different scenario perhaps for NYCTV? I think it's very important personally to continue the great work that NYC does because it's a different audience.
We would work to coordinate it. So in effect, today, for example, you've got NYCTV involved in providing the camera work. You've got in the case of the city council, it would be the city council IT organization webmaster that would probably do the actual broadcasting. Chris would do it for other mayoral meetings. But we can work the three groups together to make it common. So you wouldn't want to duplicate the number of cameras or things of that sort. You'd obviously want to work that together. Yeah. Let me caveat my previous statement, Joe, in comparing us to the state. And of course, we're talking now, roughly 2 years later. We're in a much tougher economic time frame. So I just caution you that, getting the funding today to do this is going to be a lot tougher than it would have been 2 years ago. So
I understand that. I guess my point is thinking about democracy is that it's the way that as we're making these tough decisions, if the public has more information, then they're more likely to understand why some of these decisions are being made.
We agree. I mean, the mayor's goals of transparency and accessibility, right. Absolutely, we agree with you on that.
I read them in the mayor's management report today.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed part of your testimony, but I've read it all, and I gather you have concerns about community boards. And I appreciate the cost concerns there, but I'm wondering whether there's some way, perhaps, I know the community boards have very constrained budgets as it is, but perhaps we could leave it up to community boards where they want to allocate money for this purpose, and then the city could give some technical assistance in implementing it. Because I know that some community boards, I think, would be very interested in doing this. Maybe not at every meeting, but there should be the ability of community boards to access this. I don't know. I'm not a technical person, so I don't know how complex that would be.
We agree. The community boards are at very different stages of their technology savvy and how they do this. But
do some of them do it now?
Not to my knowledge.
I think that, and I recommend to the chairman some discussion on this, if the community board has the money to allocate for it, then I know my colleague says they don't, but they have a lot of discretion in their budget.
There's nothing to stop them from doing this other than their technology skill and then our ability to support them. As an example, though, right now we've been doing a lot of work with community boards just helping them get their websites up. Chris has got a backlog of 6 community boards right now that he's working on. And so it's just a priority question of, we have limited resources. We can help, and we do help wherever we can. But the most important thing is they have to come up with the funding. We don't have the funding. So that, again, the funding really is the constraint.
Do you know, in addition, do you know whether they have the ability to raise private funds for this purpose?
I have no knowledge to that.
Well, that's something I think for us to look into. I can tell you that in one of my community boards, I think, number one, it would be of great interest. We have maybe in all my community boards, but I know at least one, and there might be some capability of raising limited amounts of private funds to pay for some or all of this.
The one,
so I think that should be looked into.
Yeah,
I'm sure that in the chair's district, private funds could be raised for this.
Yeah, the only
well, we know different districts have different populations. And I said parts of mine. I said, yeah, absolutely. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
One word of caution there, and certainly there's nothing that prohibits anybody from doing this whatever on their own. I mean, I think the only objection we have is that it's a mandate, so you just need to be careful on the mandate. But one thing I will caution you is a number of people are looking to do this in a public-private partnership type of way, such maybe as you're suggesting. You have to be careful, because if we're doing this as a government entity and we're using .gov, we cannot have any advertising. So we have to be very careful that there did not be an advertised model.
I think that's a good caution, and I be skeptical about advertising, although I think maybe that isn't a bad idea. I don't know. But in any event, I do think I'm strongly supportive of this effort, Madam Chair, and I do think a considerable effort should be made to include community boards to the extent that we can. Maybe in consultation with their representatives, we could work out a program. I'd be opposed to not considering or encouraging that dimension, because my community boards, not only in Riverdale, but they generate a great deal of attendance and interest on the part of residents.
I think it's good. The bill right now does not include community boards per se, although if you talk about open meetings, then everything is included. So I think that one of the discussions, thanks to the commissioner at DeWitt, we have regular meetings with the members of all 59 community boards. In fact, we can even call in. It's very exciting. But the fact of the matter is, maybe we could, on their dime, so to speak, in some innovative way, think of a way to help them figure out how to do it, as opposed to putting it on the city. I know that there's no funding per se, but maybe we could get some outside funding for everybody, as opposed to trying to do it through the city. Go ahead, council member.
In downtown Brooklyn, there's the Downtown Brooklyn Development Corporation, which has been responsible for all the development in downtown Brooklyn. In two of my community boards, we have created Friends of Community Board X and Friends of Community Board Y for whatever projects we're focusing on. And we were able to raise quite a bit of money for various projects. And so perhaps we can consider something like Friends Up. On your list is Community Board 2, 8, or 9 in Brooklyn?
Community Board 2.
Community Board 2 in downtown Brooklyn, I would think so. Okay. And where are they on the list? Are they close to the top?
We are just waiting for their content and their sitemap. I think we got their sitemap, and so we're waiting for their content, so
okay.
It should be going soon.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I want to thank you both very much. I think this is a good beginning, and we'll keep in touch in the near future and figure out a way to make webcasting happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. The next panel is Robert Feldman from Total Webcasting and Chris Reidners from Granicus. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for the invitation to be here this morning. My name is Robert Feldman, and I'm president of Total Webcasting. Total Webcasting is a small business located in the lower Hudson Valley. I'm happy to say that even in this economy, we're flourishing right now and growing. My son is my partner in the company, so it's not just a small New York business, but it's a small family business that's growing. We've been in business since 2000, focused on delivering full-service webcasting solutions to both the public and private sectors. We have extensive experience working with state and local governments, along with primary and secondary educational institutes, and some small and large private companies and corporations. Our experience related specifically to webcasting government proceedings began in 2002 when we webcasted the local village board meetings in the community where I was serving as deputy mayor. Although at that point webcasting was relatively new, being in the webcasting business, I just saw it immediately that this would be a terrific thing for government, because we face the problems that I'm sure on a much, much larger scale the city faces. People tend not to come to your meetings until they're mad at you. They're usually too late, because by the time they come, you've already gone through all of the legwork. And, of course, we're all always worried about how the press interprets what we say, whereas with webcasting, there's no doubt you can say, let's go to the videotape, although we don't use tape anymore, I suppose. We have successfully now webcasted hundreds of municipal meetings on behalf of New York State, county governments, as well as towns and villages, not just in New York State, but also in New Jersey and Connecticut. In January 2007, as we've heard before, then-Governor Spitzer, on his first day in office, issued Executive Order 3, which requires all New York State agencies and authorities to webcast their public meetings. Based on our experience, this was initially met with some resistance by various departments and agencies that had to comply, but we have now found that webcasting is considered by most as a valuable tool, not only to the public, but also for the staff of the respective agencies. Governor Patterson, after a detailed analysis of the benefits and costs, reinforced New York State's commitment to public access of government decision-making by continuing the executive order. Today, we webcast for many agencies, including the Department of Health, the DEC, Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, and the one that was mentioned, the Hudson River Park Trust, which is at Reed Street, which is where they hold their meetings. There really are no barriers for us as far as locations. Again, we go to Reed Street, which certainly is not a technologically advanced room by any means. And, you know, to our credit, we've webcasted from the top of the bobsled run in Lake Placid for ORDA, which is the Olympic Regional Development Authority. One notable point here is that even many communities that receive the open access free channel from their local cable or television franchise still have decided to go ahead with webcasting. There's a lot of barriers with any of the cable, you know, hardwired cable companies, satellite, there's so many of them. Webcasting is truly agnostic. It doesn't really care whose technology you're using, whose service you're using, whether you're on a Mac or a PC, whether you're on the internet. The question about dial-up, although we do see that it is a very small number of viewers, there are still some dial-up viewers. And technologically, when done correctly with the right type of streaming technology, we do what's called multiple bitrate encoding, which means at the same time for the broadband, we're making a narrowband stream. I'm hoping that the time will come soon that we don't have to worry too much more about that. Also, in some of the smaller communities that we're working with, those that have absolutely no money at all, they all find some creative ways to pay for this. One is to find underwriting, or using the term of public television, not sponsorship, but underwriting. And like local banks, local companies will, you know, sponsor these types of things because it's a good thing. And the more people are aware of what's going on, the more they may understand how and why government reaches the decisions that they do. Today we're here to discuss specifically government webcasting and how it can be implemented by New York City government. There are two possible approaches to take, full service or self-service. Now, with full service, a company like ours would come to the meeting location with all of the equipment necessary to conduct the webcast and the administration needed for the webcast to reach the unlimited audience that it can. We have developed a comprehensive mobile system, we call it the TW Media Cart, which allows us to do a full-service webcast with just one technician using an unobtrusive approach with remote control cameras. I know from experience that when a camera like that points to some people, it's quite obvious when it does. It makes people nervous. They're not always going to say maybe what's on their mind, or they might have difficulties. Our system kind of blends into the room, and people really don't even realize that we're there most of the time. The one person that has to go to the meeting sits off in a corner and just does his thing. It's almost like a video game with a joystick. We can control up to six cameras so that when we walk into a room like this, where there was a column properly placed right in the middle of the room, we can work around these things. And by doing this, we've reduced the cost. By going with one person makes a major difference. Also, in the development of our system and our cart, we've made it so that you can pack it into a Subaru Impreza. That's my benchmark. The littlest car that I could get it into that gets the best gas mileage. And lo and behold, we do. And the parking attendants in Manhattan are always amazed when we pull in with that little car, and ultimately out comes this nice big machine that we then roll down the street with. Now, full service isn't for everyone, and we also supply self-service webcasting to many organizations that do very, very high volume, are typically in one location, so it's better return on investment to install something in the room. You know, you can get carried away with all this sort of stuff. I do webcasting at the Time Inc. building for Time Warner, and their room, you know, I drool when I walk in there at the gazillion dollars that was spent fixing that room up. But it doesn't really have to be that way, and it can be done in a very cost-effective way. So with self-service, we would rely on the installed system, either one that was previously installed or one that can be provided by us. And we would then administer the webcast as if it was a full-service approach. Regardless of whether the webcast is full or self-service, your webcasting company should provide the necessary content distribution so there is no impact on your network. All bandwidth and archive storage is done outside of your network and requires no support from your IT department. And that's actually a very important fact and point for this to work well is to, you know, and I work for some organizations that have very, very deep resources when it comes to IT, but when it comes to this, they'd rather not, and that's the right decision because it takes the right kind of network to distribute video, multimedia, over the Internet properly. And there is a handful of those networks that are built out, and to do it right, it's best to be using that type of network. And also in our administration, without going into great detail, there's all sorts of little bells and whistles that are added that make this even better. Certainly when it comes to archiving, the on-demand aspect of this is terrific that, you know, if you can't make the meeting live at any time, you don't have to wait for a scheduled time and just go on and click. We do indexing of the agenda, which is very, very helpful, especially for a meeting that might run for 8 hours even. We just did a public hearing for the health department that went almost 8 hours. And what we do is we index the agenda so that you can click on the spot that you're interested in and go straight to that, not have to kind of weed your way through the whole video to find what you're looking for. Another thing that was mentioned is the captioning, and certainly Gail, Assemblyperson, I'm sorry, Legislator.
Gail, I like Gail.
You like Gail, thank you. That's easier to say. I go to so many governments, I'm forgetting which structure of government I'm sitting at sometimes.
Gail is fine.
The issue of captioning, when it started out, and the executive order certainly put a lot out there for us to consider. The prices were pretty high, and I know I've dropped my prices throughout the year as we adjusted to this. So now the cost of closed captioning post-production, which is very, very highly accurate, isn't very high. And the one of the benefits is you get a verbatim transcript along with the meeting. So from an archival and from a historical standpoint, from a documentation standpoint, you really have things very well covered at that moment. You have a video that corresponds to a transcript, and it's all there. So from a cost perspective, because that's always the bottom line in it all, the full service obviously will have a higher price per meeting, but does not require any capital investment. Installing and maintaining your own system does lower the per webcast cost, but it does require some portion of a technician to operate the system during a meeting. And the cost of FTEs certainly have to be considered in any effort that you do. So for general informational purposes, I don't mind throwing numbers out because I am on the New York State contract and, you know, our prices are all right out there for everyone to see. Let's say we were doing this meeting and it went for 3 hours. That would cost approximately $1,100. That's full service where the city has no involvement whatsoever. That's, you know, external network and so on. The cost for the self-service, if let's say there had been a camera installed and so on, and it, let's say it could be a fixed camera so that there was no need for staff, the cost for that is $250. So certainly in those situations, the costs are much less. And real quick, going back to the community boards, you know, one way to save money is just have somebody use camcorder like this gentleman is using, and it's easy enough to then take that and properly encode the video so that it works properly on the web for everyone, and it's a way to save you know, a whole lot of money. As far as the captioning goes, our price now is down to $295 per hour of actual meeting. So if the meeting is And long gaps, like an executive session or something, doesn't count. So if a meeting goes for 2 hours and 22 minutes, you're actually just paying for 2 hours and 22 minutes. Our captioning company, as a side, is actually a woman-owned business located right here in Manhattan, and we're happy to be working with them. We give them a lot of work, and they were just thrilled recently when we started with them because it's really helping them maintain their operation here in Manhattan. And from a hardware standpoint, we've installed simple systems in rooms from anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 for a room. And our media cart that I described that we take around all sorts of places costs about $12,000 to own. So thank you for the invitation to come here. I'm usually on the camera side or doing these meetings. And, you know, it was nice to come down here and hear what you're doing. And I hope it all works out.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your input and for allowing us to come and see your amazing operations.
Thank you.
Next. Thank you.
Good morning, Councilmember Brewer.
Good morning.
And fellow council members. Thank you for having me this morning. My name is Chris Reinders, Director for the Eastern United States for Granicus. Granicus was founded in the late 90s as a web streaming company with a very unique focus in that we only work with local and state governments. So all 450-plus of our clients are cities, towns, counties, villages, and state organizations throughout the United States. We are the leading provider for webcasting for governments in the U.S. We currently provide a little under 100,000 webcasts for governments across the country. And what we want to do is basically look at a few examples of how our clients use the web streaming technology. So I know Mr. Cosgrave referenced a lot about costs, which obviously is extremely important. And we give you basically the ability to modularize how many meetings that you want to stream and from what locations. So a lot of our clients, like Councilmember Brewer referenced, you can start at a point where you want maybe particular committees or certain council sessions that are streamed or potentially all of them, like the open records request. So basically, you do have some options. We do have kind of an unlimited model that allows you to stream as many public meetings to the web as you want. We do not charge you per hour or per meeting or anything like that. So Mr. Cosgrave also referenced the potential of 3,000 public meetings. It's obviously quite a bit here in the city of New York. So you'll see here, if you can see on the presentation here, that currently we work with the city of Los Angeles, San Francisco, city of Dallas, city of Miami, city of Indianapolis, a number of large cities that currently have over 2,000 webcasts per each city that we do webcast and archive for them currently today. So as we got started with this unique focus on government, we saw that a couple of things were very important in the minds of our cities and counties, in that they wanted to improve transparency, as we've talked a lot about today, and then also to create what we call an integrated public record, where the audio and video becomes cross-linked, indexed, and searchable with all legislation and all legislative documents. So this could reference agendas, minutes, bills, whatever type of legislation that's created here within the city, whether at the committee level or actually at a regular council session level. So we want to take a few examples here to kind of show you what I'm referencing with that integrated public record. This is our website, granicus.com, and we actually have all of our clients listed, the 400, a little over 450 that I referenced earlier. And the idea, too, is that we found that a lot of staff time is utilized to fulfill public information requests, not only for citizens, for your constituents, but also for internal staff.
Lobbyists.
They
want to know what's going
Attorneys. Sure. So we wanted to be able to integrate everything together where, rather than having to work with actual staff or to call the New York City staff, I can actually just retrieve all this information on my own on your website. So you'll see here, this is the list of cities and counties that we do work with throughout the country. I have pulled up a few examples. One thing that was important is that Mr. Cosgrave referenced also was really enveloping within Christopher and his design of the city's website and maintaining that look and feel. So the presentation of everything that NYC TV produces, it maintains the look and feel of the city's website. So something I want to show you here with the city and county of San Francisco. You've heard of them?
I've heard of San Francisco.
All right. So you'll see here that their website is embedded here, and what we do is integrate with your website, as I referenced. So you'll see here all the regular board meetings, every commission meeting and committee meeting that exists, all mayor's-related content, and then additional programming, which we know is on different channels with NYC TV. So what's really nice is that I can pull up maybe a Board of Supervisor meetings. And all related committees associated with the Board of Supervisors. So you'll see here some different committees, including Budget and Finance, City and School Districts, Public Safety Committees. Then I also have all their other boards and commissions. So you referenced, I do believe there's 43 committees, is that correct?
They grow or something like that, close enough.
Gotcha. So you'll see here they have currently approximately 35 boards and commissions that they do stream to the web through our system. So we can take a look at those. All right, so here are some of those other commissions, and every single one of their commissions and committees is once again archived, integrated with your website, categorized appropriately. And then most importantly, we have some functionality that's included with our most basic service that we provide to every organization that we work with. So I'm going to go to run one of their regular board meetings. And this goes back to the reference of what we call the integrated public record. So you'll see all of those meetings indicated by date, duration, and done typically in some sort of order according to year and when it was actually recorded. What you'll also notice is that all of the content is searchable and searchable by keyword. So what's really nice is we did, you also referenced earlier about ADA compliance, obviously for the hearing impaired. So we do have the ability to integrate the search with both all of your legislation and your bill tracking system, which is what we do at the state level a lot for state legislatures. So we do this for the Arizona State Legislature, Colorado State Legislature, the Tennessee State Legislature, where we actually can integrate your bill tracking system with the video. Then also we can integrate with the closed captioning as search as well. So we'll just look at it here in just a moment. So what's opening up here is the actual video, of course, from the meeting. We typically will encode in Windows Media Silverlight, which means that basically it is a cross-platform player where I can view with any type of browser. And what you'll also see is the documents associated with this meeting are presented to the right. So in this case, this could be your agenda, this could be your list of bills, it could be your minutes or your journal, whatever type of legislative document that you want to present with the actual video itself. What you'll also see is there's hyperlinks too within the document itself, and there's also a list of every agenda item and resolution and bill that's existed, so I can jump directly to that discussion. Also, you are able to view the closed captioning as well. It's associated with the video. And let's see if we can get that coming up here. And we did, Mr. Cosgrave did reference a higher speed connection that you do need sometimes. And there it goes. So there's my video. You'll also see, too, that I can download this to audio directly. So we do podcasting as well. So what's really nice is we'll transcode any of the files that we encode directly to MP3 or MP4 formats. So this is really nice for an attorney that wants a portable version of maybe a specific clip from your meeting or the entire meeting or whatever it may be. So I can view that.
I also wanted to show you the ability too here with the city of Los Angeles, another city that we work with, is that you'll see here with every public meeting they have here, I've got the agenda, the journal, the video, and the MP3 audio for every single meeting. The journal and the agenda are all cross-linked, indexed, and searchable with the video and audio itself. I'm going to also show you an example of a search. So if I search this content, you're going to see basically two results. One, a search of the actual legislation. Second, the actual search from closed captioning, which is what I referenced earlier. So if the funding was did include moving forward closed captioning with your different committee meetings, you could incorporate that functionality. Oops. We do work with some organizations, of course, here in the state of New York, small organizations, including the Village of Rye Brook, as well as the Long Island Power Authority and some other state agencies. So here's my result of the search. So what's really nice is that in the purple is a result of searching the actual legislative documentation. In the green is the search of closed captioning. So whenever my particular search word was said, bill number 533 or whatever it may be, I can pull up all the results from when that was actually discussed. So it's essentially integrating your audio video to your legislative history and legislative tracking, which is where we find to become really the public access tool and the power of that your constituents and staff will have access to. And then from there, I can jump directly to that meeting and directly to that discussion. Now, what's nice is if you do end up, you could start at a scale, as we talked about, where you have certain committees or certain commissions and council meetings that you do want to stream. The power, obviously, of once that you integrate all of the meetings, they are all cross-platform searchable, which is really powerful. Okay, so those are a few examples I just wanted to show you, and I'd be happy to answer
any
questions.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Okay.
Just a question. Did I see public comment? Do you have the comment from the public in the public?
Yes. So basically, if the public comment, which could be an agenda item for some of our clients, yes, there would be a direct link to when an individual or a constituent actually spoke on an item. That's correct. Exactly.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Robert, I have a question just to start with. How do you deal with archive in the state of New York? Do they have policies on that, or is that something that you're working with them on? That's on.
It's on. The executive order clearly states that the archives have to be maintained for 2 months online, and then after that they have to be turned in on a disk, which is what – it's very interesting. There are some of the smaller authorities that really – aren't into this, so to speak, and they're very quick to want to have theirs off there as soon as they're allowed to and not have any meetings up there that don't have to be up there. But then there are those that, see it for being a benefit, and we maintain their archives for them as long as they want. So it's really up to them.
Okay, and Chris, what is the – how does each city have a bid process? Or I mean, how does each city – I guess you're working – with some of the legislatures. I know in the state of New York, as Robert has explained to me, the state legislature is doing their in-house, and then the state of New York is done on a contract basis.
Exactly.
So how does that – do you find that's across the country? A similar – sometimes the legislature is doing one way, and the government, city government may be doing something else, or are they more integrated, or does it just depend?
It depends. They can be integrated. The typical method we see of purchase, in this case, we're obviously on the EO3 contract, so any state or any agency within the state of New York can purchase our solution. So that's typically an intergovernmental agreement, which is about 25% of our clients, that's how they purchase our solution. 50% of our clients purchase via sole source. The remaining percentage do go to RFP and do a formal bid process.
We're RFP Nation, just so you know. There's no other way. Sure. As the head of contracts is sitting to my left here, so she will tell you that for sure. There's no sole sourcing. The other question I have is, do you find that the agencies tell you that there's more public input as a result of webcasting than streaming? In other words, what do the agencies give you any anecdotal stories about the result of your work and the way in which it integrates with public discussion?
Yes, I can give some specific examples. The first thing we do is we did give you reporting tools to show you how many hits or how many views you get on all your content. We can differentiate it whether it's a New York City employee versus someone outside the city's network, so you know where that usage is coming from, also the quantity. So, for instance, like an organization like San Francisco, since we already looked at them, obviously they're much smaller in size compared to the city of New York, but they typically will see roughly 5,000 to 6,000 hits a month on average. So we definitely see that the amount of once the constituents are aware of these services, the amount of viewership increases immensely. What we also see is a huge reduction in staff time to provide information to the public. So one example, City of Gainesville, Florida, they actually reduced their public information requests by 85%, according to their city clerk, which is obviously pretty dramatic. They do publish every commission meeting, every council meeting that exists.
They have three of them, or?
They definitely don't have 43. I think they have around 12 to 13. So we also saw in the city of Stockton, California, what they did is their city clerk staff time was greatly reduced to where by about 50%, according to them. So what they did is they took that staff time and they applied it to a passport certification program where they actually generated revenue for the city. So we've seen across the board for all of our clients, basically the two main goals of one, improving public transparency, public access, and creating tools for the citizens and staff, as well as reducing internal staff time to get information to those individuals.
Robert?
Yeah, a couple of interesting scenarios. And the stats that can be provided are terrific. Unlike television where, you know, it's kind of more of an analysis, you don't really know, we can drill down right down to the zip code of where somebody is sitting while they're watching. So that's a good, powerful tool to know if you're reaching, who you're reaching, and so on. One interesting kind of acute story, we webcast for the Dutchess County Legislature, and it's a rather contentious group, to say the least. And we were webcasting a meeting a few months ago, and one of the legislators announces that one of the other legislators who was absent from the meeting is watching in Italy, and he's saying, you can't do what you're doing. You've got to wait until he's back. So it was, you know, kind of funny, and everyone really did get a kick out of it. But on a serious note, travel being what it is, the time involved, the issues related to, you know, fossil fuel consumption and so on, all of those things, this is without a doubt going to help all of that. And a great example that I have is we do all of the Department of Health webcasting on the road, and we hear so often from physicians and attorneys that are part of all these different commissions and councils that don't always have to be there, that it just saved them tremendously. And, you know, this is whether it's Granicus, whether it's us, or whether it's anyone else, this is a really strong consideration, is that not everyone has to come to these meetings. And if we don't stop thinking that way, that everyone does, and we don't give people an opportunity for the few minutes that they really need to be involved to do that in a remote way, I think would be foolish not to use it that way. Last year, the Putnam County executive decided to do his State of the County address as a webcast only. They only invited a handful of people to the actual location, and we made it interactive so that the public was able to submit their questions while he was speaking. And, you know, going into it, I was a little concerned whether he was going to get any questions, so I made sure that we had, you know, a bunch of them in a can so that just in case he didn't get embarrassed. But frankly, it was just the opposite. It was overwhelming how many people watched it, commented how they appreciated the fact that they didn't have to drag, in this case, it's rural, so they didn't have to drive over to the location. But, you know, I would have to think in the city, transportation being what it is if you can give some people that option of not having to take the subway, take the train or the bus or whatever it might be, it's a good thing.
I've always wished that when we are having hearings like this, just like the call on New York One or even something like Larry King, I don't know that he knows exactly what he's doing, but he certainly reads the teleprompter, whatever, that you could, in fact, have call in or web in.
And you can. It's really quite simple.
Exactly. But that's where I would like to go with some of the streaming. Go ahead.
Just one reference to Mr. Cosgrave obviously referenced a lot about cost and funding,
cost
of course.
Cost, yes.
Absolutely. So just to give a little bit of perspective for the committee here, for us, an organization your size, typically our hosting fees, which basically what that means is unlimited video content, regardless if you have 3,000 meetings or 6,000 meetings. Unlimited content, unlimited meetings, unlimited viewership by the public, and unlimited bandwidth would typically range for a client your size from about $250,000 to about $500,000 a year, which is obviously quite a bit less than the $1.6 million, which I think Vancouver was utilizing. So just a perspective, and then also our upfront costs would usually range somewhere in the same vicinity, of about $250,000 to $500,000.
We've been joined by Councilmember James Sanders Jr., and I think that his constituents in Far Rockaway would very much like to have webcasting and streaming so that they wouldn't have to travel all the way in.
Well played.
I have one final question, which is that when you are the commissioner also issued or discussed the issue of space and rooms, and I know you mentioned, Robert, that if even on the Lake Placid you could handle the state commission, but what is the reality? Obviously in this city we have many different rooms, just as you do in the state or even in Los Angeles. How many of them end up being fixed? How many of them end up being more mobile? What is the issue regarding this room problem? Or is it a problem? Maybe it's not. That came up a lot in the commissioner's testimony.
Sure. Well, from our perspective, it's not a problem. And we have government customers as well as corporate and educational customers that sometimes it's a hybrid. It's a blend, depending on the location. If it's a room where there's going to be constant meetings going on, then by all means it pays to adapt the room so that it doesn't require a company to come in with their equipment, and then that can reduce the cost. But on the other hand, even a large organization like the Department of Health would just as soon have a reliable contractor that they can rely on to be where they have to be. They don't have to hire any FTEs and then have the backup to the FTEs, as well as, you know, it's a technology that's changing very quickly. We're constantly doing the next best thing because we're all trying to achieve a higher level of quality so that it's a lot closer to television quality video. So, you know, for some it just makes sense to go ahead with the full service. So it's kind of a mix, and our goal is to get the webcasting done. It isn't really about selling any boxes whatsoever. So we really will work with any client in any fashion that they need, and again, it may be a hybrid combination.
Chris, do you want to answer also about the room issue? And then
sure.
Councilmember James has a question. Go ahead.
Sure, absolutely. So what we see actually a lot of our clients in rooms like this.
With columns right in the middle.
oftentimes, because of the size of the room, one camera actually will suffice a lot of times. Basically, the one thing nice about one camera, obviously, is you don't need an operator, typically. You can, but you can also have a fixed camera. For larger rooms, obviously, you do need multiple cameras that can take, obviously, the view of the elected officials as well as the public speakers and what have you. So we see actually quite a bit of variation depending, obviously, on the size. And once again, Mr. Cosgrave did reference infrastructure. So where NYC, a lot of times what we would do in my meetings with NYC TV is they obviously have a lot of capacity and resources, and it's very impressive actually what they put on the web, especially with regards to their original programming. So to utilize those resources as, you know, as it's available, usually we would tie into whatever capacity that they have. Okay. So we do see a wide variation. So like the Arizona State Legislature, they have all of their committee rooms do have the ability to stream from both their main floor session, which requires 7 or 8 cameras, versus a lot of their committee rooms have 1 to 2 cameras. So that cost is obviously very minimal. So I can actually go to any hearing room I want, but they're not in session right now.
Thank you very much. Councilmember sure. James.
So in New York State, I know the State Assembly and the State Senate, they operate internally, or do they contract out? Do you know?
So for the state of New York,
yes.
The legislature, they do streaming in-house. So
all in-house.
That is correct. So the distribution itself, but the other state agencies outside the legislature, I know we both provide for some of those state agencies. So that is all outsourced.
For the assembly, there's a organization called New York Networks. Mm-hmm. It's part of the SUNY system. Mm-hmm. I kind of like call it the equivalent of BOCES, and they have a home base in the Empire State Plaza, and they provide a lot of those services, you know, when it comes to anything that's right there at the Capitol building.
Hmm. So what are the costs associated with outfitting, let's say, the New York City Council and all of its committees?
Sure. That's a great question. with regards to video AV camera equipment and those sorts of devices, we typically do not provide that ourselves. We work with AV companies, or in this case, we'd work with NYC TV to generate a cost there. But I would say an average would be somewhere between a room like this would be somewhere between $2,000 to $10,000, depending upon what you want to provide. And then also the capacity of, I know right now from the council meetings themselves, the regular meetings from City Hall, the issue too is being able to send a broadcast signal from that location, because they currently cannot do that now. So that's something to consider as well. That I would need a lot more information to understand what the cost would be there for those types of meetings.
Thank you. Go ahead. Sure.
I mean, just to view this as a congestion reduction or mitigation initiative is really interesting. To consider this as part of the green initiative is also
absolutely
is very
without a doubt. One comment about the historical aspects of some of the rooms. We work with Vassar College, we've been moving along with them in webcasting, because the benefits to the families that live far away to be able to see their kids doing things, and they have buildings and spaces that are just beyond belief, and we've helped them and come up with ways to build cameras into rooms that, you know, are 200 years old with amazing types of architecture. So that's a, it's a technical challenge, but that's all doable. One comment, I guess, in summation would be to perhaps just put your toe in and try it, see what the responses are. You could do that without any commitments or anything like that with any, you know, with either one of us. Just like with the state, it was all kind of like, I can't believe this is going to happen. I met with the chief technology officer, or the CIO for New York State, Dr. Middleman, like a few days after it was announced. And he goes, you found out about it as fast as I found out about it. So it was really kind of dropped on everyone. I had heard Governor Spitzer in a campaign speech say the word webcasting, and my wife said, calm down, you know, because I just hear the term webcasting and I get all excited about it. So
me too.
Yeah. But, it all settled into place. There was some stress at the beginning. Some agencies had a harder time than others pulling it together. Some did try to do it themselves and found out it wasn't, you know, their cup of tea, so to speak. So we found some new agencies that came along and said, hey, we tried it ourselves. It really didn't work out. Can you help us now? So
Right. A
lot of approaches.
One other thing just to consider, too, is that since cost is a huge factor, obviously, is that we have a number of clients. They just stream, especially at the committee level, they just stream the audio or whatever they have existing. Mm-hmm. So in this case, like City of Sarasota, you'll see they have every commission and meeting published here. But most of this, 70% of these meetings are only via audio. But the nice thing is you still have the indexing and linking to legislation, and it's still all searchable. So it could be a nice starting point, too, without you having to upgrade your infrastructure, essentially, for all of your committee rooms. So that's something else to consider.
We've been joined by Councilmember Bill de Blasio, who has a quick question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I was late today. What's striking me here, and looking at the comparison in Commissioner Cosgrove's testimony and other municipalities, I mean, I'm just struck by how much the public would engage more if not only they heard the audio but the video as well, and that the cost is real, but is, to me, small price to pay to get folks actually to understand the issues better, get more involved, right down to the community board level, which I think is a great example. Someone said to me the other day, in fact, PTA meetings should be webcast so that people would, you know, engage on a level that busy parents would love to but can't often because of schedule. But certainly community boards, which are prone to kind of cliquishness, and need to be a place that's for broader debate, I think it would be very powerful to have people feel engaged because they see it, get comfortable with it, and then might get more deeply involved. So I just, my question is, and maybe this came up earlier, this is not a huge cost in the scheme of things. It is a huge cost compared to today, you know, starting at zero, but not in the scheme of things. Has there been any discussion with, in terms of the major technology firms, perhaps helping to pay for this as a pilot? I mean, thinking about both... Some of them, I'll use Google as an example, that I think has some sense of social mission, but also in terms of a positive, valid public relations opportunity to help the biggest city in the country bring the issues to the people. I would wonder if there isn't a way to do this with some or all private funding.
On a smaller scale, in the Lower Hudson Valley, there's an organization called Statewide Media Project. They're a nonprofit, and his sole purpose in life is to help underwrite live webcasting of government meetings. And he's raised some money. He's gotten some member items. It was hard to believe he did get some money this year. And he's very optimistic now that next year he's going to have even more money. And he basically pays to have meetings covered, in particular ones that have, you know, a lot of public interest. So I think that there are opportunities like that. I had mentioned earlier when it comes to the community boards that perhaps, like I have run into in some of the small villages and towns upstate, go to a local bank or a local company that's maybe a profile company in a particular community and say, hey, can you help us out with this? We'd really like to get our stuff online. And, you know, they're pretty inclined to do it.
Bill, it makes sense. We can't advertise on any city channel. That would be the only...
No, absolutely. And I mean, literally, it would maybe it's more of an NPR model, but even less advertising than NPR has turned into.
We can't.
Thank you.
Thank you, panel, very much. And thank you for your input. And I'm glad you got to hear the commissioner, some of his concerns, because that'll help address. We are going to move forward.
Thank you very much.
Our next panel, Susan Lerner from Common Cause New York, Josh Breitbart from People's Production House, and Rachel Faust from Citizens Union.
We won't get rid of our operator because we love him.
Over here. Whomever would like to go first, go ahead.
All right. I will start. Thank you. I have a very short written statement, and I would much rather riff a bit on what we've heard this morning. First of all, I'd like to commend the chair and all of the co-sponsors of this proposal, how excited we are to see this moving forward. I have to admit, as somebody who is thrilled to be back in New York after a long exile in California, that, and I do not want to be an advertisement for any particular vendor, until today's meeting, I did not know that the Los Angeles City site used an outside vendor. But I am a user of Los Angeles's city website. I've had the ability to sit in my former organization's office on the west side of Los Angeles and not have to burn fossil fuel and fight an hour and a half's worth of what should be 20 minutes traffic to get downtown to simply monitor a city council meeting or a committee meeting. I've had the advantage of preparing for testimony the night before on a crowded schedule at 1 o'clock in the morning at home to go to the website, click on tomorrow's agenda for the Ethics Commission, click on the supporting documents, print them out in PDF, read them, and tailor my testimony accordingly. So when I came back to what I consider to be the greatest city in the world and started doing government reform work and went to the website and found that New York was way behind Los Angeles. I was shocked. I was taken aback. We are one of the communications, if not the preeminent communication capital in the world. And certainly we should be able to allow our citizens to have the advantage of the cutting edge of technology. And so we're very excited and looking forward to the increased dialogue of figuring out the best and most efficient cutting edge way to bring this up-to-date technology to New York's residents, because they will participate. I mean, my personal experience is that indeed they do. When I testified in the Los Angeles City Council on issues that were of interest, I was always amazed at the phone calls and the emails that I got from people throughout the city saying, oh, I heard your testimony, or, you know, I think you were wrong in what you said to the council. That's not the position your organization or the organization I belong to should be taking in officially. So I found that for as an advocacy organization, it benefited us. We got more input from our members because they were able to monitor the testimony, the input that we were having at the city level and sometimes at the state level, and engage our members and have them be better informed, more educated, more informed citizens. It's a very exciting process, what technology can do for us. And so what's been interesting for me at this meeting is that I will be honest and say that I have a prejudice against too much private public partnership. I feel it's an erosion of the capacity of government. But I've had to reassess that today because I've learned, you know, what some of these private firms are able to provide very quickly at a lower cost. So I'm going to have to reevaluate some of my basic philosophy because I'm familiar with the LA system and it works incredibly well and was put into place pretty quickly, I have to tell you. The other thing that I think is really interesting is the discussion about the community boards. And, you know, we're in the YouTube age. If my organization, which is not that technologically savvy, can figure out how to video some of the forums that we present and upload them onto our MySpace and our YouTube page, then it seems to me that community boards could, as one of the previous speakers said, be encouraged to use private, you know, they're volunteer people. Most everybody has a video camera to take pictures of your family events and other things of interest. Find somebody who is willing to come, you know, get a tripod. Just go ahead and tape it. And if the city were then in its website to encourage a specific upload format, as I said, YouTube does it, MySpace does it, and just have that posted to the community board's webpage, I think it's sometimes a question of encouraging creativity and involvement rather than trying to squelch it. We could see a lot more information on the web.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Brewer and other members of the Council. My name is Rachel Foss, and I'm the Policy and Research Associate of Citizens Union of the City of New York, which is a nonpartisan, independent civic organization of New Yorkers that promote good government and advances political reform in our city and state. We thank you for holding this important hearing and on this bill, which aims to increase the openness of our city government by webcasting the meetings and hearings of the Council, city agencies, commissions, and task forces. We support the bill as it will move the city toward greater openness and transparency of government operations. Requiring the City Council, agencies, commissions, and task forces to webcast their meetings and hearings will increase their accessibility, as has been talked about a lot this morning. And allowing the public to easily view these from home or from any location with Internet access will allow increased access, of course, and encourage the public to become more engaged. And will, we hope, result in more citizens weighing in on the decisions that are made by our local government. Further, archiving the webcasts will allow citizens to view meetings at later dates and provide an additional public record of the meetings. We applaud your leadership on this issue and the Council for introducing this important bill and urge you to consider strengthening the bill further. Although, as we've heard this morning, there are things that you will need to consider going forward about cost and the range and the scope of the bill. But one thing that we do recommend you look at is expanding it to include other government agencies that receive significant funds from the city budget. budget, such as the Board of Elections of the City of New York. The City Board is not considered a city agency, as you know, but rather is an entity created by the state, but unfortunately is not covered under the Governor Spitzer's Executive Order Number 3. As the commissioners of the City Board of Elections are appointed by the City Council, we believe it is both in the interest of the Council and, of course, the public that their meetings be required to be webcast. We suggest that you also take a look, and if there are other agencies or entities that may not be covered by this bill that should be, of course, we'd like to encourage the maximum inclusivity. So,
thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
I'm sorry, I realize there were two more points that I'd like to briefly make. Number one is a lot of what we've been talking about is archiving and retrospective access. So I'd just like to point out that they ran into some problems at the federal level using a private vendor and then having the video of the committee hearings actually be public property. So in discussions, should you be going with the private vendor, ownership of the actual content and long-term accessibility is obviously an important concern. And archiving through disks and just making the videos permanently available as a physical object that residents can actually go someplace if they have to and look would be positive. The other thing that I would like to add, and I touch on it briefly in my written testimony, is that once we have this great recording real-time and retrospective system, we need to think about proactive ways to provide information, documents, and encourage comments before the meetings and hearings that will be webcast to engage the public in a real dialogue.
Thank you. Josh.
Good morning. My name is Joshua Breitbart. I'm the policy director of People's Production House. I don't want to repeat what my co-panelists have said. I agree very much with what they said, so I'll just skim through my testimony. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about this important forward-thinking amendment to the city charter. This proposal embodies the highest ideals of technology and government, and People's Production House believes it would bring numerous benefits to our city. Webcasting and video archiving of meetings of our local government is a great example of the democratizing power of the Internet. We often hear about this power, but we forget that the Internet is nothing without the content and applications that we choose to put on it. While my organization believes that this is an important good government measure and a policy that would improve local journalism, and we support it for those reasons, we are primarily, as an organization, concerned with the digital divide. And we believe this measure actually contributes to the closing of the digital divide in New York City by making the Internet a more valuable service for New Yorkers. Nearly all people in New York who do not have broadband access at home could purchase it, but have so far decided not to. While city council hearings may never get the same audience as Otters Holding Hands do on YouTube, they've got up to 12 million views now, this measure sends a message to all New Yorkers that there is important, relevant content for you online. This measure makes the Internet more valuable to New Yorkers, which is an incentive for them to invest in a broadband connection. However, as the democratizing power of the Internet goes up, those without access to the Internet fall further behind. With passage of this measure, watching webcasts of government meetings would join the list of civic activities like researching candidates or publishing one's political viewpoints that people on the wrong side of the digital divide are shut out from. So this measure places a further burden on the City Council to support other measures to get New Yorkers online. On behalf of People's Production House, I look forward to working with you on this ongoing effort. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Are there any questions? The one question I have is when you are thinking about utilizing this in terms of your members or the public, what might be some examples? Let me be specific. I know in Los Angeles you talked about how it is when you're writing testimony. My understanding from talking to the vendors previous to the hearing, having visited them and, you know, talked with them, is that in some cases, in order to accommodate the ADA improvements, the video actually goes up a little bit after the hearing. So it's not a real-time hearing. And I think that makes sense from a cost perspective because it is important to make sure that it is an ADA-compatible production. So the issue then would become, how do we use it in a, as you suggested, Susan, previous to perhaps, and also what would be some examples if we are doing this for a limited number? Maybe we don't do all 3,000 quote-unquote open meetings, but we do some aspect of it, including perhaps the Board of Elections. We would also come to some kind of a list that would make sense, that's most public friendly. But what would be some examples where you think that it could be used either to improve dialogue with the public or to help people think differently about government? Because one of the goals, I must admit here, is to have people understand that the government is something that is useful to them and something that they can relate to.
Well, I think one of the proceedings that both Josh and I took part in was the contract franchise review board discussion about the Verizon citywide cable franchise contract. Great difficulties getting a copy of the contract in advance. The hearing was called on very, very short notice, and I think that if it had been possible for people to access the agenda and the document beforehand, to file comments perhaps through email, and to watch the actual testimony and discussion of the board, that it would have increased the public input and public understanding of the process. I certainly, from a Common Cause point of view, would very much support a phased introduction and a dialogue to identify the appropriate commissions which should get priority for webcasting. I would certainly hope that it seems perfectly appropriate to say council meetings and city council committees should get some priority because they are citywide, and then to look at the commissions and try and identify the ones which are going to have the greatest impact, I think, in public interest.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I would add that, as a media organization, we record a lot of the events we participate in, and we use them to educate people about the process, not just what happened, but the general process of participating. And it makes, being able to see what happens at a hearing makes the experience of participating in it for the first time much less intimidating. Another way that we use audio and video that we gather is we produce journalism pieces and documentaries. And one thing you might consider if you're, creating an archive, I believe that you may be only creating a low-resolution digital copy, but there's also the potential to license footage for people who want to use it for documentary purposes. And again, that's the kind of thing that just makes the process a lot less intimidating for somebody who doesn't do it for a living.
I found in Los Angeles that it was helpful to be able to say to people who are interested, or to urge people to come, actually, and testify to the city council or to a council committee hearing, you can watch the proceedings on the web, in advance. You can see what's going on. You can see how people like you participate. So if you care passionately about this particular issue and the council is discussing it next Tuesday, look and see whether you're comfortable. And after they've watched it on the web, actually, people who are really involved in a particular issue, I found, are more comfortable taking public transportation, driving down, getting involved in testifying, because they see that there's no magic to it. Mm-hmm. It's accessible.
Okay. I'd just like to make one addition. I think with archiving the webcast, something to think about is that often the public might not be aware of what is happening of a hearing until after the fact. And this way, at least they'll be able to see exactly what occurred and then provide their input to their elected officials or, leaders in city agencies.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That's a wonderful panel. Our next panel is Jolie McPhee, who's quite a star here in our committee. And I'll tell you why in a minute. I think you'll see it. And Kason Kleinman, who is from Nonprofit Help Desk. Go ahead. Jolie, do you want to start, sir?
Okay.
And thank you very much. Just so everyone knows, this is the star of Broadband Advisory Committee, where he videos and then puts all the material up on our blog. And then in addition, he is putting the material from this hearing and others on YouTube. So I'm very appreciative. Very special individual. Go ahead, sir.
My name's Jolly McPhee. I started videotaping and webcasting the New York music scene 10 years ago, and I'm also joined the Internet Society, and I've become its secretary. And so I've been doing this on behalf of the Internet Society for, you know, matters that relate to us. And we're a global organization, and people are interested, and we have people watching this stuff very keenly in the Pacific Islands and places like that, you know, that have nothing to do with New York. But there are issues that come up here in New York that come up first. I mean, like, for instance, the recent white space hearing that, you know, are of nationwide interest. And so it's interesting, you know, not just for the city for that. I really was thinking just to talk, you know, a little bit about technical things, you know, that in terms of webcasting live, that audio is often as good as video, that there's a lot of people that when they're in the office or something, they're doing something else, but they're listening on the headphones to what's going on. So to just send out, you know, an audio feed, and that also hits people on dial-up or something who have less of a thing. And then when I put it out, I usually put out an MP3 stream. I put out flash video, which is the most common, now the most common thing. The Congress always used to go out in reel, and I noticed they just changed, you know, maybe a month ago to flash as the most common platform way of doing something, of having the capability to download the video. I personally use the iPod format, and which is the H.264, and that's probably just about good enough to use to, you know, it's not at broadcast quality, but it's of a fair quality. But you'd have to have almost a cable modem to watch that. I'd like to emphasize what Joshua said about the other side of the coin is getting people access to, so that people can actually watch the stuff. And then the other thing I'd just like to mention is to think about also about the outreach so that people know that the stuff's there. Because it's a bit of a frustrating thing for me is I go to a lot of effort to put this stuff up, and then I haven't had as many viewers as I might hope. And, you know, personally, the only way I get to know about these things is through Canal's newsletters. And I personally, you know, although I'm involved, did not know until I came here today that the state was putting out, was webcasting. No one had told me. Further comment is in terms of licensing the video that you put out, you know, is it going to go out into the public domain? Or would you consider some other kind of licensing, like, for instance, Creative Commons, where if you wanted to, you could put out you could put it out onto Creative Commons non-commercial, and then if someone wanted to use it commercially, they could come back to you and do some kind of deal with the city?
Very helpful, sir. Yes.
Okay.
Nice to see you.
Okay. My name is Keza Kleiman. I'm from the Nonprofit Help Desk, which is a division of the Jewish Community Council. I am not going to follow my written testimony, because of everything that's been said, I'd rather respond, which goes to one of the points that was just made about preparing. I prepared my testimony in a vacuum. It would have been really neat if I had some idea who and what else was going to be said. I would have prepared a far more responsive and, I think, useful testimony. Not that my written testimony is, you know, useless, but it's not as focused, I think, where it should be. So that is one example of why webcasting is so important. I would like to make a technical point, which speaks to a point just made in terms of cross-platform. Silverlight was mentioned as a cross-platform. I'm a little leery of that. I don't know how well at the moment it plays on the Mac, on Linux, etc. I do think that when the city looks at this, it's very, very important to really not be just cross-platform across Microsoft platforms, but really across the universe of what people out there are using. Linux is becoming a very, very popular, low-cost alternative. Netbooks that are like $300, $400, primarily run Linux. I think it would be a real shame to
go into this at a point where, you know, there's this explosion, the more standards-based, the more truly platform-agnostic in terms of technology that the city is, I think the more useful this platform will be. So that was just, you know, a technical issue. Some of the other points I'd wanted to make were, you know, the commissioner kept on repeating about how, you know, we have to think very carefully about mandates, which is true, but is concerned that, well, you know, you've got rooms that, you know, meetings are held in people's homes and whatnot. I just have to laugh, because the truth of the matter is a video camera that can plug into a computer costs all of that $250. And, you know, maybe that's not broadcast quality, but let's be real. You know, it's a really fairly straightforward way of getting moving on, you know, all of these myriad little meetings, so to speak. And I think that approaching it from that side as well as from the city council side has a really big advantage, because very often people see city council, it's too big, it's too much, it's not local enough. Now, my local committee, and they're deciding, you know, who's getting grants in my neighborhood, whether or not, you know, we're going to make an issue of, you know, the street cleaner or what have you. Now, this hits close to home, you know. So this is something a lot of people will be more interested in seeing, and that's a better hook, so to speak, to get them into, you know, looking at government as something that they can really, you know, make a difference to and something that they're really interested in. So I think that rather than excluding it, we really should look at some way of pulling it in, even if we don't start with, you know, the really high end. But, you know, again, as was mentioned, this is the YouTube age. You know, we can, and quite frankly, there are companies that actually use YouTube or similar infrastructure. So it's not like the city necessarily has to invest huge amounts. You know, it's a good way to get your toe wet, figure out what does and doesn't work. This is, I think, really important. Going, you know, looking at the local stuff helps draw people in, I think, you know, on an organizational and on a personal level. One point that I didn't hear mentioned, and this is in my written testimony, is the fact that when people, you know, and I looked at the NYC TV site, it really is very, very impressive. And I would think that the city should definitely make use of the infrastructure that they provide in making this happen. But the reality is a lot of people don't even know that the station exists, okay? And in any case, you know, when people think of TV, they think of information in certain boxes and entertainment. When they're looking for information, they think internet, okay? They go to Google, they go to Yahoo, they do a search, get the stuff up on the web, index it properly, use the right metadata. And it's not, once you figure out how to do this, it's not that hard. You know, I should have been able to get onto Google and do a search on New York City hearing technology and find information about all these hearings. It isn't there. It's a crying shame. You know, there have been great hearings on the digital divide and all these other issues. Why is it so hard to find? Do this right, and like I said, it's not that complicated. And the city, with minimal outreach, has suddenly made it much easier for people to know what's happening. You don't have to do all these advertising campaigns every time there is a hearing. But, you know, make sure that it shows up on the search engines, and you've done a huge, you know, private business will tell you that optimizing their search engine results is a really good investment. You know, one other important point, I think, is, and we're talking about open government and transparency, is that in tough times, you know, when times are good, nobody really cares who's getting funded, whatever, because I'll get what I need anyway. In tough times, hard decisions get made, and the government has two choices. Either let people know what actually really happened, or let some commentator say, well, he said this and she said that, and without taking sides, you know, without going to specific examples. You know, if a government agency is doing its job right, they're always better off when people know exactly what happened. I get nervous when I hear about a government agency who wants the stuff off the web as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I like sunshine laws, okay? I really do. So one other thing parenthetically is that there is a surprisingly large segment of the population that does not have TV, mm-hmm. but does have internet access. Sure. And some of these folks are just the kind of people you want to engage. They're often educated. They don't not have TV because they're ignorant or
it's philosophical.
For philosophical reasons, whatever. But they do have internet access, and they will use it if they see this at if they see that there is a real practical use to it as opposed to just, you know, sitting and goofing off. Last point back, I agree with all the people who've been talking about the digital divide issues. We are getting there, but there are still some huge holes. And as this stuff happens, it becomes more important to really deal with that.
All right. Thank you very much. Jolie, I have one question, which is when you, as you do so kindly, put this material up, what would be the best way to advertise it? Obviously, I find that you actually have to tell people in their email as opposed to telling them just having up on the site. People don't go to sites unless, or even to the YouTube, unless they are told to do so. So what do you think in terms of government would be the best way to make sure that people do know that there is webcasting? And in this interim state, how do we tell people about your great work?
Well, I think that the blog is a good thing. No, this is on.
It's on.
The blog is a good thing. And the thing about the broadband blog is that it's not even very... That doesn't Google up well at all.
Okay.
When you have a meeting, having one page on the web so that there's one URL with all the information on it. Another suggestion, actually, what I forgot to talk about was about, you know, the services like YouTube. Now, the reason I can put stuff up that's an hour long on YouTube is because I'm an early adopter and they grandfathered the early people so that we don't have the 10-minute restriction. But you can partner with YouTube and possibly make a deal with them that they won't show ads on your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible. But I have subscriptions on YouTube to, for instance, the Queen of England, to number 10 Downing Street in England. The Prime Minister has got his own YouTube channel, and they put on short clips. And the other thing is to know that people like to look at short clips. Now, take, for instance, your introduction that you did to the committee meeting, you know, when you read out that thing and with the text. You could do something like that when you're planning the meeting and do that briefly and put that up as the introduction that would then engage people and make them interested.
Yeah,
another thing I forgot to mention is that now Lou came today to ready to stream this thing live.
He's always ready.
And he was going to use ustream.tv. There are two services where you can stream live for free. One is ustream.tv. Another one is called mogulus.com that's based in the city. And so these community boards and everybody could be educated that basically all they need is a laptop with a webcam, and they can sign up for free for these things and webcast and archive live for a cost of...
Have you met all the community boards?
Zero, no.
Oh. I have.
Okay.
I have. It's a horrible thing.
I'm just being facetious.
No,
I've been a little
teased. Their kids
don't repeat
could come
me. Nobody heard me
them.
Say that.
Their
yes.
kids could come and do it for them.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, I want to thank you both for your testimony and also for being such regular supporters of this committee. And I think it's a good beginning because I know in past committees, just having the committee makes something move forward, just having the discussion. So thank you both very much.
Okay.
I do. Thank you very much. We're going to close this hearing, but we are promising to move forward with webcasting in the city of New York. Thank you.